Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it. Welcome
back, ladies and gentlemen, to the 55th episode of the Mod State Podcast. Man, we are almost done with November. You're like, yeah, we know, dummy. We also have calendars. Anyway, let's get the pleasantries out of the way. If you want more of us, go to modstate.com. You can get a link to all of our social media accounts. We also have our Instagram. I think there's a link. I don't always screw up the Instagram. Probably because it's the one that I'm in charge of. We also have, I also have a Twitter handle. It's NateWelland_ModState. There is not a link to that on modstate.com. And if you go to my Facebook, Nate Welland, you can find the links to the podcast as well. You can find the podcast on ModState. You can also find it on Podomatic.com and iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. So tonight, John and I dive into tax reform. And I know tax reform is one of those things that we keep coming back to, just like we did healthcare. But it's happening, and it's happening rather quickly, and it seems like it's getting enough traction. And so that leads us to discuss things like, what is the corporate tax rate? What is this fight against wealthy versus middle class? Is there fear-mongering? Do we need the growth rate that we think we need of 3% and above in this nation? It's going to be a good conversation. So stick around. Let's get John on the line.
You want the envelope?
There. You take it. It's all yours.
You kill all three of them for nothing. You greenhorn, you blockheaded jackass, you nincompoop.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Hey, man, what's going on?
Hey, 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 what do you say?
What's up, what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing. How are you, monsieur?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Very well. Well, tired, actually. I don't know what it is. Today was... Today.
One of those days where you're used to this over the course of what you've done as a professional, but still, at the end of it, you're still...
Yeah.
Nonetheless fatigued. You're still human.
Yeah. Sometimes I have to remind myself that.
Mm.
Sometimes I think I'm most definitely more human than you are with the amount of sleep that you get.
I could be lying to you.
You could be. You could be making it complete. Well, no, there's no way you're lying.
I text you a lot.
I was just going to say, that's exactly what I was going to say. There's no way you're lying, because I get texts at all hours of the night.
Sorry.
So I know you're up. Well, I don't care. I don't read them until the morning, so...
I'm sure you don't have it on, but yeah. It's strange. I'll do these long runs, and then I'll hibernate for the weekend.
It's kind of weird. There'll be times we'll text back and forth that you're hitting me up, and then I just won't hear from you for like 24 hours. And before, that was kind of weird. I was like, I hope he's okay. And now I know. Now I know you're just hibernating.
Exactly. I mean, because, you know, just as we thought, what, 10, 12 years ago, that you don't regenerate brain cells, and we know that's not true. We have long said until recently, well, you can't make up sleep. You can't catch up on sleep. Well, actually, you can.
You know,
it's probably not the best habit. I'm not endorsing this for anyone else.
Yeah, it does not work for me. Like, if I go and I try to do, I'll do a recharge, but if I'm doing a recharge like that, it's... because I feel like I'm about to get sick. If I go enough days without getting proper sleep, my body just, I don't know what it is. I hate it. I feel like it's a weakness, but I guess maybe.
No, it's not. It's normal. Okay. The fact, I mean, I'll sleep 4 to 6 hours a night. That's not normal. I mean, I guess 6 hours is, but it was funny around Thanksgiving. I was bitching to my dad, you know, over Thanksgiving, you know, man, I've been just run down lately. Dad, I've just been feeling sick. And he was like, no shit, huh?
Right.
Yeah, you know, just referring to my, I mean, this is not new. My habits got a little better in the military because I had to, you know, X, Y, and Z at X time in the morning. But Not much better.
Well, God bless you for it, because I wish I could harness. Now I do.
Oh, I think one of us doing that is enough.
Probably. We'd still be doing 3 podcasts per week anyway. It sounds as if you're in a car wash right now.
Does it?
Just a little bit. Not so bad right now. There we go. I don't know what it was. I was trying to. It might be my furnace. It's cold outside, so we had to turn the furnace on. It's cool.
There is something a whirl, but you know.
There is something a whirl. That's all good. So you put the lions up. They're out. I put my dogs to bed, and here we are, tired. Well, you might not be, but
no, regardless. Don't get me wrong. I get tired. I mean, you've seen it. You've seen me. You sleep, but I don't know. It's I think one of us doing that sort of thing is well enough, because one of us needs to not be on edge and paranoid, and I think I've got that down for us.
Okay, that's fair enough. I'll harness the.
The white knight needs sleep.
Aw, the princess. That's what you meant to say, was the princess needs sleep.
No. One of us has to be Harvey Dent.
All right, okay? Fine. Harvey Dent does get 8 hours of sleep a night, for sure.
No, I mean that with all due respect. No, one of us has to be like fresh faced and like, hi, how are y'all doing today? Whereas that's not necessarily the greeting in our future office that everybody's going to get from me. It won't be a rude one. It might be just kind of a nod.
I will periodically put Grumpy Cat's poster as of like, I'll test the mood for the partners, like just the morning coffee meeting. And then the Grumpy Cat poster will be a signal of what to expect today.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good idea.
I think it's a good idea. Because, I mean, obviously you've been around me. I don't freak out, but I mean, I might be quiet to start a day. And it's like, all right, just let me get some caffeine and Led Zeppelin going and I'm good.
So once you smell the coffee and hear Black Cat or excuse me, Rock. Black Cat, oh my gosh.
You jacked that all up. Black Dog.
Black Dog.
No,
dude.
No, I'll tell you, Rock. Why did I say Black Cat? Blues solo, I'll be good.
Okay, that works.
What happened Black to you? Cat. Why can't you say what?
Black Cat. I can't believe I said that. That was the first song my dad and I listened together. Was
thinking about
was
fireworks.
Black Dog. I don't know why I was thinking of Black Cat. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Well, I already told you the story of Black Dog.
Did you?
Pretty sure I did. Yeah. Well, long story short, so they were out at Jimmy Page bought, I forget the name of it now, but he bought Aleister Crowley's old house, and he and Robert Plant were out there writing the lyrics to that song. And at the time, I think had some sort of vulgar allusion, cleverly concealed to sex, you know, Honey Dripper and all this.
I was just going to say, and I can't imagine.
No. But as they were about to wrap up the lyrics, this black dog ran across the field, and that's where the name came from. Bullskin, that's the name of the property. Anyway, Aleister Crowley, once called the wickedest man in the world. At any rate, if that's not dark enough for you.
Okay, that is. It's the case of the Mondays on Friday. But
on Friday. That's,
there's your, thank God it's Friday, little Led Zeppelin history. And sleep, talking about catching up on sleep. So,
wait, yeah. Let me ask you this. So, a quick quote that might help enter into this. Thank God it's Friday, because it means mercifully there'll be no more press conferences after this day, you know. So, Jack the Ripper, and here's another dark tidbit for you. In his letter to the Metropolitan Police of London, the infamous From Hell letter, he said that, or no, it might have been another letter, but it was around the same time. But he said, one day men will look back and say that I gave birth to the 20th century. And it's an interesting thing for him to say. Not that these two people are the same, but I thought about this the other night. I thought, well, someday we look back at this, especially politically speaking, and say that Donald Trump gave birth to the 21st century.
Interesting.
I don't know. But anyway, with that.
With that and Donald Trump's tax reform that he's pushing through, that's what we decided to talk about tonight. You know,
just juxtapose him and Jack the Ripper.
You did. I was trying to, you know, you've talked about not being a Trump basher, and you just did
I didn't mean it like that.
I know you didn't. But
Oh.
But that's an interesting, you say, juxtaposition or analogy. But maybe Donald Trump.
I thought that maybe.
Do you think with the legacy, though, because no one wants to think George Bush ushered us into the 21st century, although he did. Who will be remembered more in history, Donald Trump or President Barack Obama? Obviously, Barack Obama for, you know, the legacy of being the first African-American holding office.
Of course.
The presidency.
Absolutely.
But who will we talk about more? Obviously, everything that the president says and tweets is archived for everyone to see.
But who's going to remember all of that exactly? Well, kind of just to, in all fairness, back to this, Jack the Ripper wasn't born in 1899 and didn't die in 1901. So it was basically a spiritually speaking quote.
Of course.
That's what I mean with the whole Donald Trump thing. So everybody, no, I'm not a Trump basher. But I think that's an interesting. I think as far as those two specifically, George W. Bush and Barack Obama go, Barack Obama. Well, legislatively speaking, yes. Mm-hmm. Referring to Afghanistan speaking, yes. But then again, 9/11.
Yeah, will be Bush's legacy.
Bush, so I don't know.
I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see how it plays. Obviously, I won't be here in 100 years, but, you know, we'll see what legacy does play out and how it, well, again, I won't see it, but our children's children probably will. And
I better not.
Yeah.
If anybody talks about life extension for me, no.
No. You know what? I think being in healthcare just made it poignant to me that at some point there is an end to this entire thing. And I think I'll know it. I think not the actual death part, but the when it's time, like it's time. I just have seen too much holding.
You want to tell you?
Holding on. I think I'll be able to figure it out. Like, it's time to go.
I kid.
So, speaking of letting go and moving on, and wanting
see
to
see how much darker we can make this Friday.
Right? It's supposed to be light. Apparently our case of the Mondays wasn't dark enough. But there, and again, I said this before when we were our pre-show actually went pretty extended, and I apologize for any of my heated nature over the pre-show because
I didn't take it that way at all.
Okay, good.
We did go about it's about 45 minutes.
Yeah, we did. But and
you weren't heated.
Okay.
You were passionate.
I think maybe that's what it was, but you brought up something that I wanted to maybe start off talking about tax reform, because what is happening is it's happening fast. And I think we are going to see, I think there's a potential to see this actually go through before Christmas. I really do. I mean, Trump is out there lauding the tax reform more than he has done anything else. So there's propaganda that's there that we haven't seen with Obamacare. And I think you're
seeing, whoa.
That's not Obama. I'm sorry, not Obamacare. Trump care. So,
okay.
Yeah, my bad. Right. Good catch.
I was going to say that he campaigned extensively for that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Continue.
You didn't see him speak the way he did against repealing Obamacare, rather, than you do today seeing him, I think, propagate this idea of tax reform and how badly we need it. And there was something you said in the pre-show, and you said, use the word fear-mongering. And you didn't say it necessarily to me, but as I was making my arguments, I couldn't help but feel that maybe I was promoting a little bit of that fear-mongering and or that I am caught up in it. And
not sure what you mean, but go ahead.
Well, you elucidated a little bit on the corporate tax rate. And for me, I got caught up with this idea and got passionate about this idea that this tax cut is only really going to benefit the rich. And I think there is some truth to say that the overall benefit is probably leans more to those who are wealthier than those that aren't. I'm not saying that there isn't going to be a benefit for everybody. I think there is, but when, like Marco Rubio said it well, he has a quote where, and I'll look it up and put it in the show notes, but I'm paraphrasing when I say, why don't we have a tax code that is overwhelmingly helping the middle class and the working class? And it was interesting coming from Marco Rubio. And again, it could be, again, like we said on the last podcast, just bitching and moaning about the middle class, because that's what everyone does.
Remember where he came from.
I do. And
he came from a working class family, like paternally and maternally. So he's actually got some credibility here.
He does. And I think when he goes back to his constituency, that's his family as well, like his upbringing. And I do believe that he does feel that way. But it's,
I think he's a genuine guy. I mean, I've never heard anybody else in the modern era. Maybe Roy Moore will. And that's not a favorable comparison either. Sorry.
Well, no,
actually,
but
this is the guy that I wanted. But he actually campaigned against all kinds of abortion, period.
Yeah.
Including rape and incest. So
yeah,
if you don't really believe what you're talking about, you don't espouse that. Kind of like me admitting to being a Nixon Republican. That's a very genuine position for him to have. So I think Marco's a sincere guy.
Yeah, I think so too. And but that being said,
like it or not, doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. The point is, he said, I think what a lot of people are thinking and what I have been thinking. And I don't want to be disingenuous or ignorant to the fact that the corporate tax cut or tax reduction is more than it just seems in context of major CEOs and all these corporations are going to somehow have their corporations have a lowered tax rate, and then they're going to get stock buyback. They are going to have higher dividends. They're only primarily going to support their investors. You know, for example, I own Google stock, and
you good know, for you.
Thank you. I don't think they give a dividend right now, but the idea would be that Google would come back and then give me a higher dividend for my shares. Although I don't own that many, it doesn't overwhelmingly benefit me. But the idea is that that will happen more than that going back to the Google employee or the Amazon line worker getting a $5 an hour increase versus investors getting a benefit. So I think it goes deeper than that. And you illuminated that for me and made me wonder, am I caught up in this fear-mongering that this is just a huge kick to the middle class or a punch in the face to the middle class? And I think we've talked about this before. This isn't so much of tax reform that we wanted. True tax reform, code change, the 15,000 pages that no one knows anything about. That's true tax reform, to clear up the loopholes. This is more of just a tax, I don't even know what you call it. Is it tax reform or is it just?
I mean, it's definitely reform because they are remaking the status quo, so it fits the classical definition of the word. But one thing that I found myself forgetting here is, and I haven't really heard any of the men and women legislating about or trying to legislate this right now talk about, but the real benefits of true once-in-a-generation tax reform, as they like to say. I think that's a cliche. I mean, but regardless, they're going to be, a lot of them are going to be dead and gone. And many of them that are alive, like, say, Marco Rubio, if they're still in office, it's going to be well into the winter of their lives. And Americans don't like to think that way. Okay, it's like I've said with Monstate, you know, this isn't about you and I. This is so you and I can look our nephews and nieces in the face and say we didn't willingly let truth become lies with the repeal of the Propaganda Act. Well, that's, again, they'll enjoy that. Our generation's goose is cooked in a lot of ways. You and I know that. Well, I'm getting too depressing here. Well, these legislators, they know that. Okay? So my thing is, leave it all out on the field. Why are y'all doing this?
Yeah, in doing that in the sense that we're essentially just rushing to something.
And Americans want this. Americans want something that we have screwed up over the last 3+ decades to be fixed overnight. And that's not real life.
No, it's not. I mean, change, even at a human individual level, change never happens overnight. Getting on the treadmill and losing weight never happens overnight. These things aren't supposed to be rushed. And at the rate we're going, just to get the votes on the Republican side, because this really doesn't create any type of generational tax reform, does it? I mean, it really just, it sort of
depends on what they actually end up voting on.
Yeah, exactly. And who votes on it. And as of right now, it does seem that they are rallying Republicans in the Senate. And
Rand Paul said he's going to vote for it. So that was a shock to me.
Yeah, it actually is. And I don't know how much of this is midterm elections, and it could be, but I mean, his constituency voted him in, and he wasn't in any danger voting against the repeal of Obamacare. Secure. What's that?
He's safe. He's safe.
Yeah, he is safe. But
is it too soon to point out that Roy Moore is leading in the polls?
I saw that. I
didn't. Is that not just the best swat to your testicles for the ping pong paddle?
I didn't know how to tie that in. But if we're talking about elections,
that was a drop kick to my nuts.
Like, oh my God. But I'm not overwhelmed.
Like, of course he is.
I'm not overwhelmingly surprised, to be honest, but
leave Alabama alone.
I'm not saying anything. So I guess what I wanted to get in on the meat of this is what it does mean for a corporate tax rate and a decrease, and what it means to actually. So there's this rhetoric out there and this idea that the America isn't growing as fast as it should, that somehow we should be at 3% growth and we've only been at 1-point-something% growth over the last decade. And this is alarming. And
which is based on gross domestic product, right?
I believe, it's a number of factors, but I think GDP probably plays into it. Mostly.
It's a big part. My point is, how many people can even tell you what that is?
I mean,
all have an expectation based on it.
I mean, I'd be curious. I think in the spirit of tax reform, I'm sure most of our lawmakers know what our GDP is. But even then, I'm not entirely sure. I put them on some sort of pedestal sometimes that they are all knowing. But
trial lawyers on a pedestal.
I know. What am I thinking? But so this also ties into the Federal Reserve, and we may get into Janet Yellen's replacement, who's the current chairwoman of the Federal Reserve. And you really have more knowledge in the economic side than I do, but there's this, dare I say, juxtaposition.
There are no experts.
There's this question that I have, and it's been floating in the ether just recently, and there's a few articles written on it, but it's this notion that if we truly are trying to get back to whatever era we were at, where we were having 3%+ growth, what's to say that the Federal Reserve wouldn't step in and they're not necessarily trying to stall growth, but they can check it in a way that you wouldn't have low interest rates with low taxes, and you would have this unfettered growth that would lead to, I don't know, too many loans.
Which is fueled primarily by what? Borrowing.
Sure.
And at some point, this isn't the Federal Reserve we're talking about here. At some point, the federal and the private sector, that's got to stop. Okay, so yeah, they may not use the word stall, but that's, in fact, that's why they always refer to the benchmark. They're looking for around 2% inflation. They don't want it. No, it's not going to happen. It doesn't matter what is campaigned on. Okay, this is the Federal Reserve. I hate to break it to anybody, is bigger than the presidency. Now, as I pointed out in our precast, this is kind of one of the areas where President Trump has a degree in economics from UPenn, mm-hmm. Okay, Ivy League school. All right. Now, interestingly enough, I think you'll see him, with Powell, I think you're seeing him appoint someone who, if he is confirmed, is going to be kind of hawkish in a sense, like Yellen has been, and is going to keep that inflation in check. It's just not realistic. I mean, for God's sake, it wasn't that long ago. If you could imagine this, China was having 10% quarterly growth.
Yeah,
that's not fathomable, and that's for a good reason.
Yeah, and you know, people will tend to look at these other countries that are up and coming, like India and China, and look at the growth rate that they have and somehow compare it to the United States. Yeah, and somehow compare it to the United States, like we're failing because our growth rate isn't matching that. And the real question is, well, at what starting point are we at? When you look at a place like China and India, their demographics are different. The geography is different. Where they started from is different. You know, we had our...
But China has a wall.
A wall, a literal wall? They do have a wall.
Just you think about that.
I can think of it, the actual wall, and then I can think about the proverbial ideological wall and...
Oh, stop it. I was talking about the Great Wall. Go on.
Okay, well, man, I was going to break into some China nationalism.
Jesus.
I was going to get out my George Friedman book and start going over China. But you bring up a good point when you talk about a wall. I mean, every country in their growth does hit a wall. They do hit a ceiling. And there are things like India and China where there are barriers to their growth overall when it comes to even just the way the countries split up. And when you look at China, who's overwhelmingly rural, and it's something like 70% rural and 30% urban, and there's no unity there. There's no, even just their political ideology will create, I think, at some point, some sort of ceiling. India is the same way. I mean, look where they're starting from. They're starting their industrial boom, and they're a new country. Just like we had our booms over the industrial revolution we had here, and then in the 50s, you know, and even before that when Ford made the assembly line, it's just a different time. And is it realistic to think that the United States is going to get back to 3+4% growth per year, and how sustainable is that? Especially when you do have a Federal Reserve who's willing to, or I'm probably doing the right thing by keeping that
in
check.
It is the right thing.
And I know
it
people.
It is the right thing. Don't let runaway debt occur in the private sector that's not sustainable in the first place.
But, and that happens. It happens in times like this. Or, I mean,
if they let it.
If they do. So.
And you're going to see them keep raising rates is what's going to happen. And people might get upset by that. But you know what? That's why these people went to school and studied economics and everybody else didn't, because they hated that one class in high school and college they had to take.
With the weird graphs.
Yeah, sure. Economists do it with models.
Yes.
That's actually a Facebook page. I didn't make that up.
Is it really?
Please look it up. If you go to my likes on Facebook, I promise you, search on there. It's Jody Bex is the young lady's name. And
I like her page.
Economists do it with models.
Well, there's a middle cross country team had a motto that runners do it on grass. So I get it. I like it. I might have. I don't know. Not saying I did or didn't.
Well, one of those had something to do with a discussion.
What's that? What did this have to do with
this? One of those two examples had something to do with the discussion, but anyway.
Yeah, it wasn't running on grass. I guess
Jesus.
I guess the real question is, if we do have this check that is the Federal Reserve, is it, I mean, it is important to have growth overall, but is it important enough that we're doing it in this way with this tax reform bill and in the speed and vicariousness, if you will? I don't know. I just don't know that when we talk about generational tax reform, and I guess maybe I just left it all in the pre-show and I'm kind of at a loss
for articulation. No, this is not generational tax reform unless it suddenly changes. It basically, in answer to your queries here, okay, this is not going to move the needle that much, okay? It's just not going to. In fact, the Federal Reserve, whether people like it or not, is more than likely the most powerful organization in the world. Why? Because it is basically the navigator of the world's largest economy. Well, okay, second largest economy, but most influential by far.
Of course.
Okay. And it just is. All right. And so it is their responsibility, obviously, to control the money supply, control prime interest rates. There's a number of things they do, open market operations. I'm not going to get into all that. People are going to start throwing up. But the bottom line here is tax reform, period, as I said before, is like economics as a whole. It's a long-term game, all right? There's no, hey, we're going to spur growth of 4% in 3 years by doing this. Even if you started to move in that direction, that's going to mean increased inflation, increased borrowing. The Federal Reserve is going to cut back on it. Sorry, Congress. They're more powerful than you when it comes to the economy. In the long run, you want to see what we have right now, which is a fair amount of steady growth. Okay, this is something you want to see over 30 years benefit the country. What we need to be obsessing over is the development of new industries. And yeah, there are going to be new industries. There always are.
Yeah, and okay. so
that's what we need to be worried about.
Exactly. So I guess if I can tie this in, there's...
Hope I didn't mess that up for you.
No, not at all. It's... There is this idea, and I don't want to call it trickle-down economics, because we talked about this a little bit in pre-show, but yes, I did allude to the fact that I think this tax reform does overwhelmingly give all American people, I'm generalizing, a cut. And I think we do see it disproportionately affect the wealthy to a more in a more positive light than the rest of America.
Why do you think there's not a tax cut for people making $10,000 a year?
Well, if you're not paying federal income tax.
Ding, ding, ding. You got it. I'll send you the article. A Democratic congresswoman didn't. She actually was going on at length about that. I'm going, Jesus.
Yeah, there are.
Anyway.
There are circumstances where, you know, you aren't going to get a tax cut, but then there should be social
nets
in place.
The congresswoman didn't.
Thank you. I'm glad. I'm glad I passed that at least. But the...
Oh, you passed lots of things.
Thanks. There... Is it actually, because what we find is what constitutes growth? Is it the steady increase in GDP? Is it new industries? Is it unemployment? Or is it this idea that by cutting the corporate tax rate, we then have corporations who in turn save more money and get more money back? And that money then in turn goes back down to the employees and the company itself. Now, I make this analogy to net neutrality. There have been several lawmakers just recently who said, look, the corporations that are getting these tax cuts, it's in good faith that that money will be reinvested where it should be, to, i.e., the working class and the middle class. So where else did we hear this? And I'm afraid that maybe this is more fear-mongering, and I'm trying to walk away from that. But net neutrality is the same thing. We say, look, if we take net neutrality off of Title II and rescind what we call the ISPs as telecommunications companies, that, look, good faith, man. They're not going to limit bandwidth. They're not going to have fast lanes and slow lanes for the internet. You're not going to have to pay for anything. It's good faith, man. The corporations are going to do what they should do. And I, maybe being some sort of economic pessimist, I say that's bullshit. That these corporations and these people who are in these leadership positions, who are in turn going to have more dividends from the stock that they own in their own companies, investors getting dividends, is that really going to the right place? And I don't think there's any evidence to show in any of this type of model that it will go back to the right place, that you will see the average American benefit from corporations having a lower tax rate, and in good faith that that's what they'll do. And that, I mean, even if you somehow were growing the economy in a way that, let's say there's 10 million unemployed individuals in the United States and half of those individuals were employed, and we could actually count it. Is that really a metric to show that the American people are benefiting from the growth that we'll see from this corporate tax rate being reduced? I'm not against a tax cut. I'm not against a corporate tax cut. I'm not. But what I am hoping to see from this, whether you want to call it trickle-down economics or not, I mean, you said it's not before, and I'm struggling to find a better word for it. But is that really going to happen?
And you have to ask yourself the right questions in order to get to the answers you want, though. What sort of growth? We've already alluded to the fact that no offense to them, but the everyday American will tell you how much they despise their average, their high school economics or the one economics class they had to take in college. So the everyday American cannot tell you what gross domestic product entails, what all comprises that. Okay. But in terms of growth, again, aside from looking at new industries, okay, what about, okay, let's concern ourselves with bringing the standard of living. Let's bring wages on par. And no, I am not referring to the minimum wage.
No, let's the standard of living.
Let's talk about the standard of living and people's wages that have been far superseded by inflation for a long time, even an inflation rate that has been lower than 2% annually. Okay, that's the sort of growth we need to be looking at that is going to benefit the American people, because that is going to be real. Hey, their wages are going up. Do I really need to draw a graph for you there and how that's going to benefit them?
Okay. I mean, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Damn. If you want to cut the top tax rates, great. As my father would say, who's going to create more jobs? All right, a CEO or somebody at the bottom of the rung of the working class. All right, I rest my case. But if you want to talk about actual growth that matters to the everyday American people, all right, then let's find ways, and there's plenty of ways to do that. That's another podcast, okay? But let's talk about bring the standard of living up, increasing wages, incentivizing two-year vote tech colleges, all right? Not everybody is meant to get a four-year degree, period.
No, right. and that's completely
those
reasonable.
Those are discussions we need to have.
I mean, look at people use and reference Germany in as another superpower, and it is when it comes to even just this idea of education and putting people in tracks to do these vocational jobs and to be apprenticed and to work trades jobs and to be able to live off of doing that. And there, so when you have the same. So let's take Donald Trump, for example. I'm not picking on him, but this is rhetoric. We watched this during his campaign over and over. We're going to bring back coal. We're going to do this. It's like as if we're ushering us, the United States, back into an era that we just will never be able to grasp. So when you're talking about the standard of living, when we're talking about actual growth, I'm just surprised that there isn't more talk from the administration and more talk from conservatives like, okay, so how is this going to benefit? Well, here's how it's going to benefit. There's going to be more companies that are going to be open that are going to be part of the new renewable resources industry that's here. We are going to create new industry. And maybe they don't have to say that. Maybe it's just by virtue of understanding economics that you know it's going to work. But I haven't heard any of that.
How many times did you hear the Democratic majority explain that?
I didn't.
In all fairness, that's my first of all here. In addition, again, getting back to what, again, really is going to matter here, the American people aren't going to care at the end of the day how much you cut the rates by, who's getting what, okay? When we have a system that doesn't, I mean, we don't allow things like we've gone on about ad nauseum, the subprime mortgage rate. Things that, I mean, think about how far that set back the middle working classes, including a lot of veterans.
Oh,
okay,
it's unbelievable.
How much is that hamstrung people in our generation that, oh, also are saddled with massive amounts of student loan debt, but that would be, as we've referred to it before, that would be government overreach to address those issues. It's a lot easier, and neither one of us is picking on the president here. Again, they're doing what they can. This is what they have their finger on as far as they can control the tax rates, all right? They can appoint the chairman or chairperson of the Federal Reserve, all right? There's a reason why they don't have total control over it. Because again, no offense to my attorney friends, my attorney family, but I'd rather economists than trial lawyers having control of things like the central bank.
Those are
conversations, though. Wages, the standard of living, addressing new industries, getting people in the right fields of education, but it's a lot easier to simply go back and forth and play this political ping pong of, oh, this is a tax cut for the rich. Oh, really? Because Mont State has grossed less than $20,000 this year, but a corporate tax rate cut would affect this business. So you're telling me that's a tax cut for the rich?
So that's what I was talking about earlier when it comes to corporations. So, for example, Mod State is a C corporation, and we would fall under the quote-unquote corporate tax rate. So there are thousands. I would venture and be a fair estimate to say there's thousands of other companies that fall under the umbrella of what we are. And you're right, we're not. Certainly, you and I aren't walking away with million-dollar bonuses this year, and or are going to benefit from this decreased corporate tax rate and somehow have buy stock dividends and so forth. That's not the case. And so that's why I had to catch myself and say, look, am I focused on one thing too much? And is my rhetoric off base?
Well, I was pointing that at you. I don't think you're off base. I think we are a product of our environment.
Well, that's just it. I mean,
you got to remember Mod State's peers, and I use that very kindly. Okay, look at the vast majority of the media. What's going on? It's that political ping pong of
Yeah.
How many of them are actually talking about the rate of inflation's been less than 2%? What can we do regarding wage, standard of living? You don't hear any of that.
No, and that's the problem. When I do a lot of my research, a lot of what I'm reading everywhere is, I mean, this is Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, MSN. It's all, this is a kick to the middle class. This is only a grab for the rich, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I find myself, I'm not alluding that you were calling me a fearmonger. I think it's my own internal struggle that I'm having, where it's like, am I looking at this wrong? And I think what you said, where the narrative needs to be changed to increasing the standard of living to reach the levels that it should be to make housing affordable. And that's the American dream. That's what Americans want. We want to be able to, you know, not have to spend the same amount of money, if not more, on childcare than a college education, a university education. And that's the current state of not even just childcare, but having to work two jobs to afford the mortgage or to save in order to buy a house. I mean, these are real things that aren't being addressed in the media. And unfortunately, I'm getting sucked up into it. And I think that, again, it's not inherently wrong that the rich make more money. It's not inherently wrong that the middle class make more money or get a tax cut. I think it benefits everyone somewhere, except for those who aren't paying federal income tax. But what are we not addressing? And what are we going to do? And what should we be focusing on? And you articulated that very well. I just don't see that. And it's a little frustrating when I kind of catch myself with this internal battle.
And I appreciate it. I think I kind of butchered it, but I think the big thing here is, again, to get back to contacting your representatives who are held accountable every 2 years and also as pertains to the media, The Economist does address these sorts of things, in all fairness, Bloomberg and Reuters do, but
sure.
The everyday American does not read those publications.
No.
They might know The Economist exists. Don't think they know about the other two. But anyway, our readership, I'm sure, does. But a lot of this is, it's long term. And again, I hate to, it sounds kind of cliche now that I've said it several times, but it really is. And it comes into getting, you know, your representative changed, getting, if they're not doing that job that you want them to do, if they're not representing the best interests of the people, and to not you, but in general, to be cognizant of our rhetoric, because it's like, well, okay, I don't think you can quantify a pair of veterans who are making less than $50,000 a year who are sinking more money. We're not losing money, but we've put more money in than we've personally derived from the company.
Sure.
Okay. The corporation, Divinity Well Unlimited, is in the black, okay, by a very small amount, but it's in the black. But we personally, we're not receiving salaries from this. We've invested assets and liquid capital into this, but we're looking to hire and expand and have two small offices, one in Denver, one in New Orleans, hopefully in the next 12 to 18 months. But we look to create jobs and generate revenue, help the overall economy, if you will, in our own microcosmic way. But I don't think you can hardly call that a tax cut for the rich.
No. And in that context, it's not, and it's beneficial. I mean, in that way, I almost become torn to the fact that my outward rhetoric is that for some reason it benefits the rich entirely when it, you know, I should be championing this because it does benefit a company as small as ours. I think when you get back to that, and you said you beat it to a dead horse about this long-term goal that we should all be looking for. It's in America, we are so instant gratification, and I am myself. And I think that spans the socioeconomic statuses, the gender and race and everything in America. And it even goes into economics and funnels into economics as well. I mean, we look at quarterly profits of corporations or publicly held companies so hard that there is this failure to look long term. And, you know, you can short stocks based on quarterly profits. You can, that's like your benchmark for how a company is doing. When you could have a company like Disney, who you in their stock, you actually see it, this slow increase and gradual increase. And if you look back, you can, if you have Scott's trade account, you can go and look if you had invested $5,000 15 years ago, where it would be at. And if you just take the time to watch money grow, you will be less quick to pull the trigger on some sort of trade. And I think we're doing that with tax reform and the growth of the nation. And we're kind of doing it in the same light. And we're expecting that we're having some sort of 3% growth immediately. And we need to get back on track where we're not looking at this long-term approach, this generational tax reform that will actually overwhelmingly benefit Americans generations to come. And I think that's a problem. I think it is disingenuous to push something as important as this is so quickly because either donors expect it or midterm elections are coming up and the security of a lawmaker's job is at stake. I don't know if that's the case or not, but it seems that way more than it does an actual long-term approach to the actual problem or issue of tax reform. I don't know.
As I said before, we're an entertainment society for the most part, and we're keeping up with the Kardashians while Rome burns. Okay, it's not very popular to have these sorts of conversations, but the truth is this is going to take time as far as seeing the long-term benefits of tax reform. And obviously the Federal Reserve plays a very long ball game, and rightfully so. This sort of thing, it isn't just semantics. This is the future, obviously, and this is where I run into trouble, or where rather some Kool-Aid drinking conservatives run into trouble with me as far as my thinking goes, when they say things like, well, government should be run like a business. I'm going, really? Mm. So I do believe it's a good thing for tax receipts to exceed expenditures, okay? I obviously want the deficit eliminated. I want the national debt reduced, okay? But to say, no. I don't want this. We're talking about human beings, for example, that are dependent, and rightfully so. You know, we're talking about veterans.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, too, about this tax bill that I didn't bring up, and I don't know if we pre-showed about it or not.
Oh, but please zoom.
The tax bill has been shown that it will increase the deficit by $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years anyway. So it's like, what are we actually doing here? And I know you've been a huge proponent of reducing the federal deficit. And if you go to modstate.com, you can actually see the real-time tracker of the national deficit. And it's rather illuminating when you go and look at it. And to add another $1.5 trillion to that, it's a little astonishing to me that it's the Republicans that are pushing this through who are the fiscal conservatives, and there's been nothing done to address that. And I realize that there needs to be spending cuts, and we talked about this in the last podcast, like, well, why don't we reduce federal spending to the DOD by $100 billion a year, or what, you know, or in some cases people would argue healthcare. And I think they were trying to do that with the Obamacare mandate, but again,
why are we paying people not to farm? I mean, there's some things about NAFTA I agree should be shredded. Why are we not talking about that? Right? Why? On all corners, you know, the left, they're too busy talking about, yep, everybody was raped and everybody's a racist. Everybody's a victim except the derelicts. And on the right, it's all, well, this $1.5 trillion deficit could turn into beautiful things like a surplus if we hold our mouths just right. It's all, I'm serious. It's a kaleidoscope of crazy pills all around in Congress.
Yeah, and I think that's why I'm almost at a loss for words. And
oh, I got some.
Do you? I hope that what we are doing, you and I, is trying to cut through a little bit of the bullshit on either side. And I think we're doing that by addressing what we see in our families and our communities as needs. And that isn't necessarily a tax cut. It is making sure that my neighbor can make a living by what he's doing and can afford his housing and can pay his mortgage. I mean, these are things that aren't going to be solved by any form of tax cut through any socioeconomic status or any tax bracket. And I think we have a huge failing here by not addressing that and taking it slower and getting bipartisan support for it. It's going to be hard. It's going to suck. But change isn't easy. And it's not the point. Change shouldn't be easy. And I think for any hardworking American, for any person that gets on the treadmill because they're overweight, I mean, nothing is easy. And we're not doing
easy ain't worth a damn, as Woody Hayes once said. I mean, how many things that have come easy to anyone do they really remember? I mean, how many, if we want to talk about this in red meat terms, okay, what are the victories in this country's history that are remembered? I mean, we can't get away from the Greatest Generation. Well, okay, does anybody want to open the class on how World War II, that victory came easy to us?
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. And this could be a win overall and something we could look back on to show that it benefited every American. And right now it's not. And there's a chance.
A punting of the ball at best.
That's the best case scenario to me, right?
Actually, that's hope for that right now, based on what's on the board. Hope for the ball being punted.
That's all that's going to happen.
Scenario, this is a fumble.
Yeah, and then we back to the drawing board as we should be.
No, change, it takes even longer. It means things get even worse.
And
not that the country's falling apart anyway, but I mean, things that need to be done. Like, things to do that, yes, are necessary. Even libertarians agree in infrastructure spending. Things like that that are just not being taken care of. I don't know if you've looked at Reagan or LaGuardia lately, but our airports and highway systems and bridges need work, okay? Things like that that are basic tenets of the government, but we're too busy, you know, spending at one point a trillion a year on wars, and now we're talking about getting involved in there's a litany of reasons here why Kevin Brady, the representative from Texas, he said, you know, we can't get this wrong. And going, well, you can.
Yes.
And he has long been a proponent of, you know, two rates, one corporate, one personal. Okay. Obviously, we're not going to get my flat tax dream, not anytime
not
soon.
Yet, at least.
At least. But I do like Representative Brady. But I know what he meant there. He was saying the American people don't want us to get this wrong. I get it. But I'm going, look. And I'm not just picking on the Republicans here, because if it was up to him, many on the left side of the aisle, there'd be tax hikes where I come back saying, okay, so how much is enough? And I look at videos of Hillary Clinton saying the top rate could pay 90%. I'm going,
that's...
she didn't say that on the campaign trail last time, but there is an interview with her saying that. I'm going, no, that's seizure of property. We're not going to be England in the 1970s.
Yeah, and funny enough, that would affect her, and I don't know if she's just saying that for shock and to try to garner support from some very socialist left that is out there. But... no, it's a healthy balance. And, you know, I don't want to see tax hikes where I don't get any benefit from it. I think...
it's all about you.
It is all about me, damn it. That's it. It's me.
Well, that's the American way.
That is American way, man. That's right.
Just selfish, godless freaks.
You know, before we close up shop, we've been alluding to the new chairman for the... Federal Reserve, and he will replace Janet Yellen. And it's interesting to me, and it's not maybe much for conversation, but I'm surprised that Donald Trump didn't pick someone that more aligns with, I guess, maybe him
in the campaign rhetoric.
Yeah, I think maybe that's a good way to say it. And his last name's Powell, if I'm correct.
Yes, Jerome Powell. Remember again, though, what Trump's degree is in.
Yeah, it is economics. You're right, and it's interesting to me though because he really isn't going to change anything that Janet Yellen has done at all. In fact, he's probably more of a spitting image, which is strange to me that he's getting rid of Janet Yellen anyway. And
because this is where, as I said to you, precast reality. Even at times like this, no pun intended, Trump's rhetoric, right? They need a hawk in this position. I hate to say that. Everybody wants to see blistering growth. Well, I don't. I want to see wages go up. I want to see the standard of living go up. But if you're asking me, should rates be kept at, you know, or reduced back to near zero, the free money era flowing, yeah, let's get some subprime mortgages going and kill off the rest of the working class. Why don't we?
Why don't we do 2008 over again? Everyone really enjoyed that. That was,
let's make the whole country like Birmingham, Alabama, or Orlando, Florida, where you're either in the 1% or the top 10-15%, or you're dirt poor. There's no middle class. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, and so to be a proponent for that and not see that coming down the pike is you're hallucinating. And we've talked about this on the last three podcasts. At what point are
we're
we going to get to that point?
Keep talking about it for the next 3,000 podcasts.
Probably.
I mean, as long as I've got breath, again, I can't look at my nephews and nieces and say, hey, you know, I knew better, come through all this. I know that I said I was going to keep serving the country after I got out of the Navy, but I was just bullshitting you guys. No, I'm not doing it. You know, we're going to keep talking about this, keep beating this drum. We might skip an episode or two on things like the Fed nominee. And tax rates, depending on what happens, I mean, this bill keeps evolving. But this isn't going away as long as this group of dunces that comprise what was never to be and is royalty in this country, until there's some semblance of reality that comes in here on both sides of the aisle. I mean, I say that for every Marco Rubio, though, it seems like there's just, I mean, I wonder if Nancy Pelosi was even awake for that.
If she was, man, she had the little flask underneath her desk.
I think Boehner is probably the smartest person to have been in Congress in the last half decade because he saw the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah, he left. He was done.
Hey, the Pope spoke, y'all. Deuces.
Yeah.
You know, he was a Catholic. That was his lifetime achievement, he said. And I guess he meant it because the next day he resigned.
Yeah, he was, I'm out. See you. Oh, anyway, well, we are coming up on an hour, and we will be back this weekend with a weekend beat. We did.
Think Olson's not here for the Catholic thing.
No, he's not. He'll listen though. He'll get some feedback.
Well, you know what I'm getting at there.
I do.
It was a beautiful night.
It was a wonderful night. I hope our listeners enjoyed that as much as I did.
So, we'll ruin another. The blind date night. We'll see if we can. We've already extrapolated on that before, but if we can. Oh, man. This is one of those, like with Trump from the last podcast, we said, you can't ruin this. Like, hold my beer. This was that night. Only it was hold my fifth of Jack, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, that was also the week around a couple weeks before, I literally crawled into my room. You took me home.
Oh, yeah. That was carried you home from downtown.
I mean, I can't really talk. The worst thing I did that night, though, was I ignored a couple of gorgeous chicks, you know, at the bar. But,
Well, we all have those. We all have those moments.
Whatever.
So, all right, brother.
At least it keeps me from getting accused of assault.
Very true. Very true. We wouldn't want that. I would like to create a storied archive of podcasts and keep the visionary horizon, the horizon and the growth of Mont State as in sight as I possibly can. So I'm glad that you did that and you weren't accused of anything. So, but anyway, man, we'll, hopefully next podcast, I'll be more awake. I apologize to everybody, but, I'll get my 8 hours of beauty sleep tonight and I'll be good to go. So with that, man, until next time, we'll see ya. I figure somebody as strong as you should have a better memory for what it was that brought you through. I know it's hard for you to discard what's carved in you, and I don't think that's what it is. I need to talk to you. I'm not a hypocrite, I just forget. And right now, the shit I'm living with has got me in the thick of it. I'm struggling.